says Everett Dunn, age 81. A recording the time of my grandfather as told to me by my father. They first lived in the Trout Brook, Saint-Jacques, and they used to go in the woods at Cabano, where they made shingles. In those days, of course, the shingles were all made with a broad axe and were taken then by the Madawaska River to Edmundston, where they were sold to Mr. George Watson, who had a raft on the St. John River and would take them down as far as Woodstock to be sold there. They lived there a few years and then moved to Presque Isle, where they did some carpenter work, and he worked then in the starch factory for Tom Fair of Presque Isle. A few years later, they heard about this water mill that could be rented. So my father, whose name was Lewis, and his brother John came and rented this mill and run it for a few years.
Said a year also. The year also.
That would have been about 1889, as far as we know. And then they kept that for a few years, but not being able to get lumber enough to operate the mill, they came and worked at the shingle mill down here on the St. John River, which was located right below where the starch factory is now. In fact, the red building that there is there used to be the office of the mill, Cutler's Mill. Mr. Crawford was a foreman at the time that they went there, and then he became manager, and my father was made foreman, and my Uncle John was a filer in those days. They used to have their own private ferry across the St. John, right north of the mill and south of the old ferry, the public ferry. They'd cross their shingles and lads on their private ferry and then haul them to the CPR station, as there was no railroad in Van Buren at the time. They worked there for a number of years, and a funny thing in those days was that they used to have their private ferry at the Feast of St. Anne. They would have the company's team to haul this ferry up to St. Anne, and the town boosted quite a band in those days. My father being a member of the band, they used to go up there to St. Anne, and at night, after the ceremonies at the church in St. Anne, they'd drift down in the St. John River, and the band was playing. It was really something worthwhile listening to. They had these caps with the lights that went on it, kerosene lights with wicks on there. That's where they used to use at night to read their music while they were playing the band. And coming down, when of course the river, the banks of the river were always lined, when to watch them coming back, because they'd only come back and at twilight, and it was all a beautiful thing to see them and hear the band play on the water coming down. Then in 1900, St. John Lumber Company came in. They started the lumber mill, and in 1903 they wanted to start in the big shingle mill. Well, they were told that my father was able to do this work of setting up shingle mills, And they had him come up there to set the mills in this new mill up there in 1903. And he was stayed there and was foreman there up to the time that the St. John Lumber Company went out in 1925. At that time, there were really three ferries on the St. John in the town. One was the one of the mill. The other one was at what used to call Ferry Street, which now is Bridge Street. That was run by Imad Tabzi. And another one was run from what is now called St. Mary Street, and was called at that time Ferry Street also. And that one was run by Sever Violet. There was another one that not in use at all times, was up above by Fulton's, where Fulton Street is now. But in the summertime, when the water was very low, the people could cross there with their teams, and in sometimes in the latter part of July or August, the men could even walk over because they had put rocks at that particular time there. But that wasn't used all the time, but there was at one time these three ferries. Then I suppose I have to tell you about the time that I got lost. When I was young, I used to get lost so many times. In fact, I got lost when I was older too. But when I was young, in this particular time, I was perhaps 6 or 7 years old, I had gone to meet my father at the old mill, and we were taking the cow back with us, because where you have St. John Street now, that was a pasture at those days, and we used to put the cow there. Coming back, when we come near leaving the mill, my father had to go back for something that he had forgotten, and the cow started going away. And being a small fella, I had to follow. I couldn't stop her. And she had brought me right up to the field, to the pasture where we used to put the cow. And Dad, coming out, thought that we had come home, so he took the other road. Well, when I see that we were in that pasture, and I didn't know what to do, so I found my way back to the mill, and there was a fella there that was had come in after supper to bunch some singles. Well, he wanted to bunch his shingles before he could take me home. So after he got through, he finally agreed to bring me up home. And as we came up on what is now Bridge Street, there were perhaps 50 or 60 people out looking for me. They had all taken the lanterns out of the Martin store and the Gagnon store, and they were all looking around for me. And when I saw those coming, I got so scared, I didn't know what to do, but finally got reunited home anyway. Another thing that might be interesting was the moving of houses in those days. There was Mr. Louis Mador, was the one that did most of the movings. There was practically always a house in the road that he was hauling to one place or another. In fact, where we used to live, where the Gabby house is now, the place was bought by Louis and moved from there on McKinley Street. The main house was put on Roosevelt Avenue and is now occupied by the Hobarts. The other one was moved near where the Marcel Langlais home was and was rented at the time. It was easy in those days to move houses because there was no wires to bother and no electric lights or telephone, and it was they didn't even need a permit as much, as far as I know, in those days to move houses. And how they were moved was the house was set on big skids, and there was a big winch that was put about, about 75 to 100 feet from the house, and there was a big pole, and the horses would go around this pole and pick up the wire on this winch, which would pull up the houses. It was slow, but it was safe, and I don't remember of anybody ever had a house that was got into trouble or damaged during the moving. Violet's Camps. Oh, for a lodge in some vast wilderness. Okay. This poet's sentiments, which appeal so strongly to the hearts of so many thousands of people, wishing to forsake their business cares and the distraction of the city life for the advantages offered in the enjoyment of vacation delights in nature's realm. The wilderness of northern Maine, the ideal hunting grounds in all the world, on the borders of the Long Lake at Violet's Camp, is a lodge as contemplated in the mind of the lover of nature, the true and realistic ideal of the hunter, the angler, the canoeist, and the general recreationist. Here lies the most attractive canoe trip offered in northern Maine, the Van Buren Circuit, as it is called. The circuit has its starting and finishing at Van Buren and includes a most delightful journey over some 110 miles. Thanks to the Bangor Aroostook Railroad and its connecting branches, thanks to the Hammond, and thanks to Violet's Camp, this circuit affords to the recreationist, the health seeker, the best vacation travel with the wilderness enjoyment. At the same time, to the businessman, an opportunity of being constantly in touch with the business world. Van Buren, situated on the west bank of the St. John River and the eastern terminus of the Bangor and Aroostook, would in itself will repay the tourists for making a visit. The largest sawmills in the states were here, I suppose. The Van Buren Trust Company, one of the finest and best equipped banking establishments east of Boston, is here. The Hammond is here. The Hammond is a metropolitan hotel on the edge of the wilderness. The largest New York hotel has no more of comfort and conveniences, including steam heat, gas light, long distance telephone in every room, reading and writing rooms, pleasant dining room, ladies' parlor, spacious office, billiard room, telephone and telegraph office, over 40 sleeping rooms, many with private baths. From the hotel, from the Hammond, 12 miles of the journey are made by team over a smooth road and through a magnificent growth of maple, birch, and beech trees to Violet's Camp. And Violet's Camp is the Hammond in miniature. Here you can find all the luxuries of modern hotelry, with best service to all departments, comfortable sleeping rooms, large dining room, table always supplied with fresh eggs, milk, butter, vegetables, etc. Tents, canoes, rowboats, motorboats, guides, in fact all the equipment and supplies necessary for an outing party. The location is helpful, the scenery beautiful. Violet Camps are at the gateway of northern Maine's most famous moose and deer region. In the waters are landlocked salmons, square-tailed trout, tuledi or togue, all excellent game fish. Violet Camps are the starting point for the Van Buren Circuit, which comprises Long Lake, Mud Lake, Cross Lake, Square Lake, Eagle Lake, Fish River, and the St. John River. Long Lake presents itself is the first to the view of the tourists for over 12 miles. The scenery not only has never been surpassed, but not even equal. It is the ideal outing for the man, woman, or family seeking a summer trip where ease and comfort can be combined with a reasonable amount of helpful outdoor exercise. Through one quarter mile thoroughfare, we come to Mud Lake, which is remarkable for its superb setting of scenery. The lake is encircled by mountains, and on the left-hand side flows the waters of Mud Brook. This brook offers a rich treat for fishermen, while the section round about is a particular favor for big game hunters. Then we reach Cross Lake, near which the stage road from Caribou to Fort Kent passes, and thus enables us to receive our mail and daily papers. Cross Lake is especially noted as the haunt of that very rare bird, the bald eagle. After Cross Lake is Square Lake, the ideal lake of Maine, presents itself to the view of the tourist, and such a view. On its borders are clustered several sporting camps, where fresh supplies can be obtained. The largest square-tailed trout ever captured in Maine was taken from this lake. Through a 4 mile winding thoroughfare, an easy 4 mile paddle, traveling with the current all the way, the health seeker reaches Eagle Lake, where several brooks and tributaries of this lake affords excellent fishing grounds. Following the nature's course of river, Fish River, an outlet of Eagle Lake, passing through the village of Fort Kent, the canoeist reaches the St. John River. 44 miles more with Frenchville, Edmondston, Madawaska, Grand Isle to render the trip shorter and more pleasant, and Van Buren is reached. The circuit is completed. The voyageur, not wishing to put so many premature an end to his excursion, can pursue the course further down to St. John River, visit Grand Falls, the Niagara of New Brunswick, and go as far down as the city of St. John. The Van Buren circuit is without the shadow of a doubt the angler's paradise, the big game hunter's choicest resort, the general recreationist's place for all places. Come to Violet Camp by way of Van Buren and by Collins Siding. This last, 20 miles northwest of Caribou in the VNA, is only 4 miles from Violet's Camp. Come any time from the going out of the ice, usually early in May, until late in summer, and you will find the fishing surprisingly fine and perfectly satisfying. For rates and further information, you have to write to A.Z. Violet, Van Buren, Maine. This Van Buren canoe trip, I remember of Willie Watson and Alphonse Pelsey telling me that they had taken the trip 1 year, had made it in 4 days, and they were raving how nice a trip it was. Willie expressly saying that the most beautiful part of the trip was seeing the sunrise about 3 o'clock in the morning on an early summer morning rising on the lakes. He said that to him was the most beautiful thing that he ever had done. Another time, Dr. Terrio and I had gone to their farm, which was on the edge of the woods before going to the lake, and had taken horses there. We were on horseback and gone to the lake. About a mile or two in the woods, we ran across two men that had come from Boston to make the trip. They had a canoe, they were carrying their canoe. They had been taken there by Joe Maddor's taxi. They had come in on the midnight train in Van Buren and had been taken there, and they camped at the Terrio farm, and they were walking and carrying their canoe and their outfit to the lake. Well, we took all their canoes and got it on the horses and went to the lake, took their canoe for them. They were going and said that they expected to come down on Saturday, leaving Monday morning. Well, I remember that they had a beautiful little silk tent that they had made. They were working in a silk factory in Boston, And they had this nice little tent made on purpose because it was light. I fell in love with it and wanted to buy it. And they told me they'd sell it to me when they'd come through the next Saturday. I was working at the Keegan Mills at the time and watched for them going by that Saturday, but missed them. It didn't go. And the Violet camp or the hotel that we were talking about recently was built there, and then it wasn't a very profitable thing because the Mr. Violet sold it to people from the thoroughfare at Sedigat, and in the winter on the ice they hauled it to the thoroughfare, and it still stands there not very far from Joe's sporting camp. The A.Z. Violet that had that camp at the lake, after selling it, came back to Van Buren and built the big brick building that was sold later years to Udo Cormier for his big garage that he had there for years. And another thing of interest that happened while Udo was there was in the spring of the year when the ice was going down. This Markey man that lived near behind the Catholic Church was going on the ice to save some lumber which was mixed up in the ice that saved these logs. And while he was there, the ice started going down the river. Well, he started hollering for help, and Udo got a big rope from the garage, ran on the bridge opposite where this man was on the ice, and threw the rope to him, and they pulled him up on the bridge. That's how he saved himself.
It wasn't gingerbread, it was Marianne, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. It was Marianne cookies. He said, "We don't have Marianne cookies." He looked at me with a silly grin. He said, "We only have Mary Me."
More than your in the most and your more.
And a man singing with a daughter is, as usual, 81 years old.
And Pee-wee, his daughter, 47 years old.
If Yes and Chanson was written by Reverend Father Francois. Tell our George Thibodeau's song. Sung by Ever Dion.
Parlons donc des vallées de Brook, ils sont sassés comme des brutes, ils ont voulu transporter la chapelle et le clocher. Mes amis, je vous conseillerais de prendre l'avis du curé. Vous souffrez bien plus d'honneur de prendre l'avis de Monseigneur. Monseigneur, il avait dit qu'elle ne grouillerait pas de si. Ce que je trouve le plus curieux, John Tratton est avec eux. Ah, s'il était dedans la France, il ferait dégraisser la panse. Avec la graisse du rognon, il ferait une façon de savon. Parlons donc, monsieur l'hiver, qui fait des masques à tous les soirs. C'est pour masquer les cochins qui viennent voler mon butin. Vous souvenez-vous, mes amis, quand vous avez venu chez nous, avec des plumes sur la tête, vous étiez comme une bande de bêtes, vous avez venu chez nous comme une bande de chiens loups. Le plus gros des assassins, c'est Michel du Gros-Hustin. Il disait, pour les mettre à mort, attendit qu'on les fort demande, car si l'on est déclaré, on va tout être exilé. On dit que le Gros-Hustin, c'est un homme comme il y en a point. Il s'est pris d'un piège à our, c'est un coup de la Providence. C'est le bon Dieu qui l'a puni parce qu'il courait trop la nuit. T'en souviens-tu de la grosse Thalie? Quand tu comptais des mentries, t'as dit qu'Hustin était au seau avec Régis Thibodeau. Mes amis, faudrait parler des polices qui m'ont volé. Vous ferez mieux de me rendre, car vous allez tout vous faire prendre. Si vous me les rendrez pas, le diable vous emportera. John Farrell est pas content, il a noyé sa jument. Il dit que c'est la faute à Michel, suffit que Michel est un prophète. Il avait prophétisé qu'il sa jument allait se noyer. Voulez-vous savoir, you, c'est vis-à-vis de chez nous. Devant toute la populace, juste qu'il fait ses tours de crasse. Tout le monde, il le savent bien, qu'il fait des tours de cochin. Parlons donc, Régis Violette, c'est un homme d'une grande gamelle. Grande gamelle, y'a rien dedans qui fait crever ses enfants. Dominique est devenu fou, car il mangeait pas son sou. Il a dit, madame chienne, je vais tout manger ta crème, attendis que je suis fou, je vais en manger à mon sou. Il a pris un gros bâton pour tuer la Puritan. Il y a dit, n'avance pas, je te défoncerai l'estomac. Il avait Magritte sans façon, elle disait que c'était bon. Elle disait que c'était des diables qui venaient chercher la canaille, c'est que c'était les démons qui venaient chercher Rosimond. On dit que Rosimond, c'est un maître bon garçon. Ils l'ont fait un injustice, ils l'ont saisi sa wagon. Ils ont élevé un procès que t'en sortiras jamais. Rosimond, t'es pas assez fin pour plaider avec Martin. Martin va te lever un en bloc que t'en sortiras jamais. Qui a composé la chanson, c'est un vieillard du canton. C'est un homme qui a mal d'une jambe, c'est un coup de la Providence. Il vivra ben 200 ans, si le bon Dieu est consentant. Certaines parties de la chanson ci-dessus, c'est elle qu'elle fut chantée par Exauce Violette du Grand Hustin, quelques semaines avant sa mort en 1937, et arrangé par John B. Michaud. Certain parts of the song was told me by Henrietta and Everett Dunn, also Mrs. Fred Parent and Mrs.